Daddy, you know what I wanna hear. I want some more and then some. That I love you only, dear. I want some more and then some. How you feel.
With your Mayo Clinic Radio Health Minute, I'm Vivian Williams. We often laugh and make fun of them, but for many women, night sweats and hot flashes are no joking matter. While hormone therapy remains the most effective treatment for really bothersome night sweats and hot flashes,
we go through a number of lifestyle modifications that they can try before we ever talk about considering hormone therapy.
According to Dr. Stephanie Fabian, that includes avoiding or cutting back on things that can trigger hot flashes, like caffeine, alcohol, warm beverages, and spicy foods. Stress management is also very important.
Techniques like acupuncture or...
I've a little heart that's been double-crossed. The waiting's been so long, so long. It's hard to be believing. I thought I'd missed my guess. I thought happiness for me was lost. I want more, some more, some more and then some. You know how I love that stuff. Whisper from now on till doomsday. But I never, no, 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 I never will get enough.
Okay, welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Beautiful day here. Get everything set up for you, and we'll go do some talking and walking. This morning, as we're going to take up from last week, there was a discussion with the Ethics Commission, and I had Ms. Natalie Wassa on. And as I said last week, we would invite her back, and I actually think we have her on the line now, and she's going to join us. And we're going to take up that subject of Ethics Commission, and we'll talk in depth. And if you have any comments or questions, or if you're out there and you've actually had some cause to file a complaint with the city and county of Honolulu's Ethics Commission, and I must clarify, there is a state. We're not discussing the state per se, just the city and county of Honolulu's Ethics Commission. So let's see what we can. Good morning, Natalie. Are you there?
Good morning, Carol. Yes, I am.
We're going to have to do some unsticking of buttons around here. But thanks for calling and joining in with me. If you could, just go ahead and introduce yourself again for those that didn't pick up last week. And let's sit and chat about the Ethics Commission and what's broken, what's not broken, and what we can do to fix it.
Sure. I'm Natalie Wassa, and I've just been participating in meetings at the City Council and the Ethics Commission for a number of years now, and very interested in the subject.
Mm-hmm. And you are from the Hawaii Kai area, right? Were you once on the neighborhood board or anything?
I am still on the neighborhood board, yes.
Okay. And this, initially, my contact with you was to ask about the performance audit or management audit that was being, quote, I guess, considered or proposed. I don't know how far it got, but there was one scheduled by Councilman Trevor Ozawa, and that was Resolution 16-164 that spoke about looking to see if we could have it a resolution to have an audit, the city auditor conduct an audit.
Yes.
And so what would that audit look at? Do you recall any of the greater details of it?
You know, the performance audits are different than what some people think of an audit as. It's not looking at the financial information, but more of the management and performance of what is happening within an entity or an agency. So, for example, with respect to the Ethics Commission, they could be looking at best practices and how efficient they are processing complaints, and there's a lot of different things that they would be looking at with respect to the commission.
And more specifically, what would they, for example, the receiving of complaints, would that be one of them, and how they process those?
Certainly, that would be one thing that they could look at. You know, what is the process for receiving complaints? How does it move through the commission? What is the communication to the person making the complaint? That type of process could all be looked at and compared with other cities and best practices to see how it can be improved.
And then others can, the process is to see how when an agency's head or an agency employee calls up the Ethics Commission to seek advice, that then is also part of their process, correct? And how will they monitor to see how that is being treated?
Right, so I actually haven't done a performance audit myself, but my understanding is the auditor gets an understanding of what the law is, what is required, and then they would take a look at different documents and interview the staff to see how things are actually handled. So in addition to the complaints, the Ethics Commission handles requests for advice, and they also do the ethics training for the city employees. So when they go in, then they would take a look at all of that and just see how it's being handled. And then at the end, they would make recommendations for improvement.
Now, I try to look at some of the records that I file complaints with them, and we'll talk about the current structure or the climate or the environment or what is supposed to be in place that's not. We don't have an executive director. We know that much of the Ethics Commission. Do we have an investigator?
At this point, no. As far as I'm aware, they have not hired one yet.
And I may have misspeaking, but it's like hitting a moving target. They say they were recruiting or would temporarily hire an executive director. Am I correct?
Right. So they did rehire Lori Wong, who in the past was the on-staff assistant legal counsel. And my understanding is that she will start tomorrow as the acting executive director.
Now, the term acting is somewhat befuddling and confusing because it begs the question, if you're acting, do you have the full authority, or are you acting to a certain point where here's a line that the commission dictates to you and you have to toe that line, but you can't initiate your own action, or am I too paranoid?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure about that. I am concerned, however, about the method the commission has taken in hiring somebody. You know, initially they wouldn't even release information on whether they were hiring for the executive director position or another position, whether it would be temporary or permanent. And I think any time we have this lack of transparency, there's always a valid concern on the behalf of the public, what is actually happening.
Well, some of the real concerns that I have, and having dealt with the Ethics Commission, I currently have a complaint against the reigning mayor now, and I think I may I would best be served to have gone and put it on every park bench and wrote it, scribbled on every tree, because it's, if there's no executive director, where is my complaint? I filed it. They acknowledged receiving it. But again, it was about what I believe to be improper campaigning on city property and city equipment for a campaign. Where is it going to go by the time they assemble a team or an executive director, and or will that person have to be confirmed by the city council? If so, by the time they get around to it, the mayor has the elections are over. If they ever get around to it.
Yeah, see, that's a very valid concern. And I just would like to point out first that even with the full staff, which was 5 members, even at that level, the Ethics Commission has been understaffed and underfunded for a number of years now. But especially given the turnover with the 3 very important positions, the executive director, the investigator, and the on-staff legal counsel, there's just nobody there at this point to even make an attempt to try to handle these cases that are in the pipeline. So realistically, I don't see how they even could address your complaint before mm-hmm. the election.
And I believe that there are others. I've been speaking with other city employees who have actually filed complaints. And they, too, have basically tossed their complaint into a black hole and awaiting. And the danger of that is, so the listeners will understand, while there should be the Ethics Commission in place and the executive director, and when a party files a complaint, that person should be protected against retaliation and all of those things that come along with being a whistleblower or going to the Ethics Commission. But that's not there, so it's the wild, wild west, and basically, under this climate, these conditions, if you file a complaint or go to the Ethics Commission, you might as well put a bullseye on your back and go back to the office and sit there and just wait until you get stricken down.
Yeah, unfortunately, nothing can be done at this point. With the staff that they have, the 2 people who are working are very good at what they do, but they can't, you know, do anything beyond logging in a complaint. Now, with respect to painting a bullseye, the Ethics Commission is still obligated to keep those complaints anonymous if that is the way that they were introduced. So, you know, I understand people are hesitant about even filing something, but I think that needs to be done. We need to have that record at least in the commission so that when people get hired, they can address all of these complaints and, you know, put them in a list of priorities.
Mm-hmm. But what about this process? Did someone drop the ball anyway? I mean, they saw this coming. They even took actions that contribute to this demise. They did. It's not like it developed itself and evolved from nothing in the twilight zone. It actually is at the hands and the doings of the commission. So how can we be assured, I ask, that there will be a follow-up when they have themselves allowed this as professionals, as a commissioner, as commission, with these duties, they fail. Am I putting too much or being too dramatic?
No, I think there are some valid concerns there, given what's happened over the last 3 years. I mean, I think many people have read the media reports of how the Ethics Commission put a muzzle on Chuck Tuttle when he tried to provide information to the media. On the rail issue, there was conflict with a big case right after the mayor had done his inaugural thing. There was the case of ORI and Nui Nui and how that was handled by the city. And so the Corporation Council did their own investigation and wouldn't give it any information to the Ethics Commission. Or I shouldn't say any, but they weren't very cooperative with the Ethics Commission. There were a number of things that have happened that just made it very difficult, I think, for the staff anyway to do their jobs. And when you have that kind of situation where it's not truly an independent commission, then we have these types of concerns, and we have people who are frustrated and leave. Mm-hmm. And that's not good for any of us.
Now, just if you would, a bit, there's some listeners, and what is the Anui Nui, ORI?
Oh, ORI Anui Nui. Okay, so that's a nonprofit entity up in Wahiawa, and they have gotten millions and millions of dollars of grants from the federal government, from the Housing and Urban Development CDBG program. And there was a question in that particular case about a $10 million loan that was given to them, I think back in the 90s. And the question was there any impropriety when that particular loan was forgiven by the acting director of community services, who is now the chair of the city council, Ernie Martin.
Mm-hmm.
And under, I think, Caldwell was acting mayor at that time. So there was a question of whether there were, you know, they used their positions and improperly forgave that loan when other organizations didn't have their loans forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
So Corporation Council then did an investigation and said, no, we believe that there wasn't any wrongdoing on behalf of the mayor, but the Ethics Commission couldn't get some of the information they needed, and they had to ultimately drop that investigation.
Mm-hmm. $10 million of the CDBG grant, and I suspect that is why Ernie Martin didn't want to step into the arena, because two guys that have acted improperly or something transpires that was just questionable, $10 million or so, that's up in Helimano. Many of you know of it by different names, ORI or what have you. But, yes, Ernie Martin was that. And that just went by the wayside. Nothing happened. I mean, he was keeping people in, he being Martin, keeping people in suspense about whether he was going to run for mayor or not run for mayor. And I suspected that he wouldn't dare, because this would be like opening a wound, an old sore. But, again, what I would say, my observations is that I say closely to corruption, and someone say, well, we can't prove that it's corruption. How do we know it's corruption? I don't think it's corruption. I will submit this. While we may not be able to define it as corruption in the general sense, I would say that it's strange that these behaviors tend to benefit certain individuals. And these individuals being the Caldwell, for example, who gets to appoint some of the commissioners. Now, it's not corruption, but it's just so happened that things are broken and they don't get mended, and things have some illegal taint to them, or suggest there's an illegal taint, and we don't get a full investigation, which ultimately benefits Caldwell. So I don't know if that could be quantified or described as corruption. But then when you have such a sophisticated group of people with great expertise in law and what have you, and have performed in courts, and I beg, there's some greater explanation needed.
I would agree with that very much. I actually took a lot of time looking into ORI and Nui Nui, and what I saw based on their 990s and their, or I forget how many other entities involved in that, it's really, it was very disappointing to me that the Ethics Commission had to drop that investigation, because that entity and the other related ones have, like I said, gotten millions of dollars of taxpayer money, and the federal government even did an investigation, and in the end, all that happened was ORI didn't really have any consequences to that particular issue. They the city had to redirect $2 million, I think, out of the $10 million, they had to redirect $2 point some million to some other program. But it was just basically a slap on the hand as far as I could see. It just wasn't really what we should have gotten.
Here's what's puzzling to me. We know that we have thousands of employees, and we have lobbyists and others that come to do business with the city, and we know there's honest lobbyists and there are dishonest lobbyists. We know there's honest employees or dishonest employees, and we know there are some right on the fringe that but we have also the city council, and we also have the commission, and we have the mayor. At some point, when all things are broken, each one of those entities have a responsibility to the public, to the taxpayer, to say that we can't very well accept your tax dollars and spend them so loosely with the threat of having the taint of corruption or procurement violations and all of that to favor someone. So therefore, it is imperative, it's important that we put in place an ethics commission, fully funded, fully staffed, with absent of the nonsense that goes on. And going back to, I shared with you the letter. I wanted to know that this so-called audit that was being proposed, and we'll walk through that. Trevor Ozawa submitted it in July, correct? Or
yes.
June 29th or something like that.
End of June, uh-huh.
He, City Councilman Hawaii Kai, he submits it, and it has his first hearing, and there was the first hearing, but then he canceled it. It was canceled.
Mm-hmm.
Then the commissioner of the Ethics Commission, the chair, Ms. Marks, Virginia Marks, wrote a letter saying that, and we talked about it last week, that she was not able to make a meeting that was scheduled on the 5th of July regarding this proposed audit, and she couldn't make it. So for some reason, it disappeared. Now, I got a letter or got a phone call back from Trevor Ozawa's office to inform me that the reason it did not go forward and it was canceled, per se, it was because they didn't have a quorum of that committee, of the EAM, the executive and the committee. But that was it. Then they had a reorg within the city council, and the reorg they took out took Ozawa.
Listen to your body. It may be trying to tell you it needs some.
Took out Ozawa and put in Ron Minor, city councilman. Now, I've contacted Ron Minor's office asking, was he going to reschedule it? But he basically blew me off. I don't have a response from him. But Ozawa did respond, and Ms. Marks did respond, and she had no other communications with Ozawa regarding that. So the question is, why isn't the city council placing a degree of urgency on this, or importance on this, to go ahead with that audit? That would be fixing the problem.
Yeah, it's very disappointing that you haven't heard back from Ron Minor on this, because even without all of the issues that have come up the last few years, a performance audit would be a very good thing to do, because they look at the best practices. And so now adding on all of these problems and not having a functioning ethics commission, I think it's even more important that an audit be done.
Mm-hmm.
So people need to write to Ron Minor and let him know that this is something we want to see done. And I'm actually going to contact the city auditor and see if that's something that he can put on himself. You know, they have the discretion for certain audits that they can put into their own programming. And I'm going to see if that's a possibility for them.
Mm-hmm. Now, the performance management audit would look at things, for example, is the commission following best practices? And also, are employees going through the ethics training? So if you have no structured or ethics commission, then the people are not getting the training either, are they?
Well, that part I'm not so sure of. Because it is mandatory for every employee to go through the training. The Ethics Commission did a pilot project earlier this year with an online training program, and they got good results from that. And so this current fiscal year, they did get funding to continue with that training program. And that was another issue because it was $6,000, and the city administration wouldn't put it in the Ethics Commission budget. And then it only got put in on third reading at the full council in June.
Mm-hmm.
But it did go in. And so I'm hoping that part is at least continuing.
Well, you would think there would be some urgency on the part of or excitement on the part of the city council, because checks and balances, right? And let's say people are taking this training by video. Who then records it?
I think that might be something that the two people in this ethics staff can handle. I'm not sure exactly what their specific duties are, but they might be able to track that.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the subject of lobbyists, disclosures and properly reviewed, there's a time frame and properly reviewed. Is the staff adequate to review the lobbyists' reports and the concerns with lobbyists?
You know, I think even with the full staff before that part of it was, there wasn't enough time to adequately review all of those forms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not so sure that was really being handled the way it should have been. Again, because the lack of funding, and, you know, when you have other things you're working on and your day is full and everybody's working, cases are just piling up. It's hard to handle everything like this. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, again, I'm going to refrain from saying it's corrupt, but I am going to take great liberty in saying, well, it sure smells like it. Because here's a proposal to actually move the Ethics Commission's office from downtown Honolulu to Kapolei. Now, how is that going to impact? It just seems that anything to cripple this and to undermine it seems to be in place and going forward. I mean, if we have no ethics commission, then everything should be locked down and greater scrutiny, and the mayor should make some formal statement or assuring the public, he and his deputies and his city manager or something, and the city council should, because it's our money and our interest. It's not theirs. Well, maybe they've gotten to believe that it's theirs and their friends. I don't know. What do you think about the Kapalamahalei?
Kapalamahalei, yeah. I'm actually quite concerned about that because it's going into an area, for people who don't know, it's near Costco in Ivalei at Dillingham. And that's also where the new driver's education or driver's licensing is happening. So there's limited parking. The space that is assigned to the Ethics Commission is limited. And not only that, but they share the area with another department. And in order to be able to use the lunchroom, all the employees have to go through the conference room.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're running an ethics commission and you're investigating, you want to be able to assure the people who are coming in to be interviewed that they're, you know, going to have confidential interviews and that they're not going to have people walking through. And so I don't know how they're even going to manage that. The Ethics Commission itself meets at lunchtime, usually once a week on Wednesdays. And I don't know how they're going to do that, because if you have employees who want to get to the lunchroom, they either have to go through the conference room or go outside and walk around and enter from the outside. So I see a lot of potential issues with respect to moving to Kapalamahalli. And then add on to that, that parking is limited. It's removed from where a lot of the city employees are.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it creates a whole lot of problems.
Well, I understand that Caldwell, in his brilliancy, decided to have, you know, when you drive in the parking lots, there's sections for various, the chief and the directors put parking, and they have it marked on there. I think Caldwell is actually going to have whistleblower on two parking stalls. So,
yeah.
you know, this is the kind of guy this guy is. But, you know, everybody say, let's keep him. Yeah, or let's make a parking stall for him in Caldwell. But it's the equivalent of that. I'm exaggerating. Caldwell didn't put whistleblower on it. But, it would just be another act that would complement the silliness that and this disarray that we see in the, quote, ethics department. It's crazy, because if I was a person who wanted to blow the whistle, I surely wouldn't go in the mess hall or the cafeteria where I'd marked right through with the ethics commissioner or the ethics investigator. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
I mean, you might as well inscribe a scarlet letter on your head, whistleblower.
Right.
So what this says is that it's actually everything that can be done to diminish the integrity of this, quote, ethics commission seems to be bit by bit, piece by piece. And at the end of the day, you have what we have, a dysfunctional, non-existent entity that's going to do what? Enforce ethics? So the mayor has control over the budget of the ethics commission, right?
The mayor prepares the budget,
mm-hmm.
and then, of course, the city council approves it, and they are allowed to make amendments to it. So it's being handled by people who are sometimes the subject of ethics investigations, and therein lies the problem, because it's not an independent agency.
We are hurting.
Yes.
I was just looking through a note here, but could change the way commissioners are approved. There should be some visitation of that process. Do you think so?
Oh, my goodness, yes. So right now the mayor makes the appointments, and the appointments are approved by city council. And this is only for the commission. The executive director is hired by the commission. So what we have is the current commission is made up of, the most recent appointments were three appointees from Caldwell who are former judges, and there have been questions, at least on the appearance of those particular appointees. So there was a proposal to the Honolulu Charter Commission to change the way the appointments were made. And unfortunately, it didn't move forward. But I thought it was actually a very good way to take a look at the makeup of the commission and how we're appointing them. The proposal would have taken several different organizations, for example, the Bar Association, the UH Law School, and several nonprofits, and they would each have appointed two people to the commission.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that way you take it out of the legislator, the elected official's hands, and put it into people, I think, that are respected bodies, and then they make the appointments.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, the commission shot that down.
The Charter Commission.
The Charter Commission, yes.
Yeah, because they were appointed by and handpicked by. You know, and Mayor Richard Daley is laying in his grave going, damn, I should have moved to Hawaii.
Yeah.
I should have. Things are just ripe there, man. I could own the whole world if I could just make it, get out of this place and go to Hawaii. Because something's wrong here when the ultimate measure of engaging and protecting and enforcing and protecting public's interests is treated with the importance of a picnic. It's, you know, potluck, bring your own, and we'll feast at the public's trough. And something has to stop. Is there any emergency measures that anybody can do? I mean, for example, I'm just asking this, is it possible that people can get together and petition the FBI, the United States Attorney, and say, we need help. We don't burden us with proving that they're crooked. Just look at the law and what the administrative rules are that say these things should be in place, and they're not.
As far as another agency like that, I'm not sure. I think the best course of action at this point would be the city audit, the performance audit, because they would look at that, and they could also address the issue of independence. Okay. And I would actually ask them to do that, because I think that's a very critical component of the Ethics Commission that we just don't have right now.
Yeah, but I that sounds far-fetched, but I'm saying that because we see in place, Ozawa cancels it because no quorum, so going back to that situation, why no quorum? Okay, let's say you didn't have one that day, but this is the people's business, and this is important. So let's have one tomorrow. Let's call a special meeting. And I'll get back to you guys as to who was on that committee at that time that didn't have time to attend and have a quorum because maybe they don't believe that ethics is of importance. But apparently something happened. They had something so important that they couldn't reschedule it in a timely fashion. And now Ron Manor sits with it in his hand. Is he being influenced? I don't know, because he didn't have the courtesy or the respect to respond to my request in writing or what have you. So who knows? Maybe he was out busy recruiting an ethics commissioner. I don't know.
Well, I do know they had a big meeting later in that week. I think that every now and then they get together with other counties and talk about county business and how they're going to address certain issues. But yeah, I agree. It should have been rescheduled. There's no question about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the sad part. They didn't say, well, we rescheduled, but something else came up. No, it's just, we just dropped it and screw it. It's over with, you know, and I got pulled out of that committee, and so now Manure has it, and so that's it, you know. A month later, nothing.
Right.
Yeah, you know, and that should have been immediately floated. Let's see if we take a call. You up to a call?
Sure.
Thank you, caller, for calling. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Thank you very much for taking my call. Thank you very much for both of you. In terms of a quorum, I believe it was Manahan who did not have a quorum. However, he got Pine, Manor, and Elefante to come, and now they had a quorum for their what they wanted to do. And in terms of...
Wait, back up for a minute, Richard. Specifically, you're saying they didn't have one regarding the hearing of this resolution of 16-160?
No, this was on a different issue.
Oh, okay. I want to make sure that...
Yeah, my point was they are able to do this if they want to have a quorum.
Right. Thank you. You're visiting that place quite often. And that's my very point as well. They, if it was important to them, or if it was their crony or somebody that gave them some money or going to give them some special favor in the elections come next week, or it's some political payoff, oh, they'll gather around and sing Kumbaya.
And the other thing I wanted to mention was in terms of conflict of interest. Years ago, mentioned this, redundant, but got many hundred pages on Nestor Garcia and conflict of interest from the Ethics Commission. However, Elefante has been, by his own admission, found guilty, or self-admission, I should say, conflict of interest. And he will recite 2, 3, 4, 5, 8 different reasons on the same issue why he seeks disclosure on the preponderance of evidence or whatever the terminology is. So therefore, if he is found, and now how does the Ethics Commission investigate him and the bills upon which he has voted, as they did with Garcia and found him guilty, if there is no Ethics Commission? And thank both of you so very much. And Natalie Hawassa, I've met her many times. Saintly, that's
Saint
Cox, Saint
Awasa.
Thank you both.
All righty, thank you, Natalie. You have any comment?
Yeah, actually, so that's a good point, because we should actually clarify that there is a difference between Councilmember Garcia's conflict of interest and what Councilmember Elefante is addressing in the meetings. So Nestor Garcia did have was found to have a conflict of interest because he worked for the Kapolei Chamber of Commerce, which is pro-rail, and he also voted on rail issues without disclosing that he worked for the Kapolei Chamber of Commerce. Now, what Councilmember Elefante has been doing is stating that he has certain people have donated to his campaign, and it's not a conflict of interest according to the ethics rules as they are written, but he is disclosing them out of an abundance of caution.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what he's doing is good. It lets people know that he has gotten these donations. You know, some of the other members have done it occasionally, and a couple of them have never done it. So I wouldn't necessarily fault him for doing it, but it is a concern that people have raised that, you know, if you get donations from a certain party and they're a significant amount of your campaign, then shouldn't that really be recognized as a conflict of interest?
Yeah, well, the president of HECO donates to David Ige, so Constance Lau. I mean, so, he disclosed it. The question is, I really don't get caught up in the abundance of, because if you go back and pull Nestor Garcia's declarations, you get be sickened by the number of times he make that statement.
After he was caught.
Yeah, I'm saying so.
Yes, we need to make sure that, because it was after he was caught that he started doing that.
I want to make sure that we don't portray these people as being just baby dolls sitting there waiting to be taken home. These are people that are aggressively pursuing their own special interests and being motivated by their friends and cronies' special interests. And it leaves us as taxpayers holding the bag and having to put more money in it for no reason. So the question I would have regarding Elefante would be, one, were you part of that committee, and were you the entity that were not? And I'm going to try to find that, go back to the records and look and see. But hold on, there's another caller. Caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Good morning, Carol Cox and Ms. Iwase. I was wondering, Ms. Iwase, are you related to Henry Iwase?
Iwasa, my husband was, yes.
Oh, Henry was your husband. Oh, but anyway, what I want to say is that in this book I have about becoming a person of influence by Maxwell and Dornan, it says here that many succeed momentarily by what they know. Some succeed temporarily by what they do, but few succeed permanently by what they are. So knowledge without character of integrity, you can have knowledge, but without the character of integrity, you cannot fulfill who you are. So what I'm trying to say is, how this idea of good and bad, how is it cultivated, this knowledge of good and bad, so you have the Council of Integrity and the Ethics Commission to sustain right and wrong. President George Washington said, we must labor to keep the celestial fire alive. That celestial fire is the conscience. So the education system, what are they teaching these young people?
Okay. All right.
About
yeah.
What is good and bad?
Well, I that would be a good conversation and discussion, but see, we have adults here who are acting out of line, and we're trying to get them back in line. So I appreciate your words of wisdom there, but right now we're talking about rusty old buckets who have learned a way that they probably had some of the better teachings in life about ethics, but for some reason they abandoned it or it escapes them. So, well, thank you, caller. Go ahead, Natalie, if you have any comments.
Well, actually, I think that's a great point. You know, what are we teaching kids today? It's math and science and how to pass tests. And I think perhaps we're missing out on some of this, you know, basic ethics. I don't know what the answer is. There's so many pressures on education these days. But certainly in the colleges, that could be something that is a required class. And I don't know if that is these days or not.
But, I mean, we all agree. I don't want to sound like that's I'm not concerned with that or interested in that point. But right now, we're dealing with adults. We're dealing with elected officials. We're dealing with a system that's broken. And I would find it painful to try and figure out by circuitously going back to the schools and learning from that direction, coming back through the schools to find out what they're learning, not learning, and then explain why Nestor Garcia would behave the way he did. I would say what we should do is teach the Trevor Ozawas and all to just simply place a value and an importance, a degree of importance so high that if you don't have a quorum today, then you commit to the people's interest and say, well, you know, I'm not going to be hearing anymore nothing, and I'm not going to participate because this is important. If we can't show the public that we're guarding their interests, then nothing we do is worth it. That's just me. That's what I would be doing. But again, that's just a personal opinion. 524-1080 is the number. Real quick, if you've got a question or comment for myself and Natalie Wassa regarding the Ethics Commission, please call in. Go ahead, Natalie. We got about three more minutes.
Well, just so people know that the importance of the independence of the Ethics Commission, one of the things that I had done this year was, or actually late last year, was ask the Charter Commission to look at creating an Office of the Inspector General, and there are other municipalities that have implemented that office and then attached the Ethics Commission to it, and there are various ways that it could be done, but there just seems to be a lack of political will with respect to trying to change that whole issue and make it a more independent office. So I would ask people to put pressure on our elected officials and tell them, you know, this is really important. This is what we want. And recognize that without it, we are losing, we don't know how much.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how much, I mean, you and I will be just guessing, but financially, how substantial of an impact financially by having a dysfunctional or non-existing Ethics Commission?
You know, the cost on that is, there's really no reasonable way to calculate it.
Right.
Because if people are abusing their positions and giving out contracts where, you know, to friends without going through the proper channels, or using their staff to build their own personal houses or whatever it is, you know, we just don't know until somebody says, hey, take a look at this. This is happening, and then they do the proper investigation.
Right, and we will never know. That's just a question you just asked because we're being bored. Because if they're stealing from us, then some of them are so good they can seal it for years, and 25, 30 years, and it pops up, presents itself in the form of a loss or something. So we would really never know the dollar amount, but we shouldn't have to know. We should know right up front. We should know that we have someone or an entity that is in place that's policing the interests of the people, period.
Correct.
And those that operate outside of that, they're not welcome and they jail. And I'm still trying to figure out how Nestor Garcia got a card to go and our friend Cachola got a card to get out of jail for free, and Rod Tam went to Zippy's and bought a sandwich and a pickle for his friend, and they put him in jail. That's the other side of that. That they say it's not corrupt, but that's what I say. These things point or suggest, or smells like a duck, quacking like a duck. It must be a monkey. I don't know. But thank you, Natalie. If you have any other comment, go ahead. But we're down to the last minute, so that's it.
I guess I would just urge people to make their opinions known that this is really something that's important, and let's work toward change.
All righty. Thank you. Anytime you want to call and chat with us and inform us, and we really appreciate what you do. And, again, many people have asked me, why don't we have you on more often? So my invite, whatever you have in subject matter you want to talk about, feel free. We'll leave one of the lines open for you.
Okay, thank you,
Carol. Always. Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Aloha.
Okay.
So, folks, we're not trying to make trouble here. We're just trying to alarm you that when things are this badly broken and you've entrusted people with your money, you want some checks and balances. And so we're going to be back in the next hour, and we're going to talk about the solar farm up there in Waianae. Did you know that there's about a 160-some-acre solar farm that has been being installed, and there's the children at Kamaili School. The dust is so bad that it's the teachers are having to wipe it up and what have you. And so and school starts this coming the second. So we'll talk about that and a few other things. And thanks for listening. Aloha.
For myself, I must learn for myself, not from what someone else has said or done. And so I live my life from day to day, try to smile while feeling my way, just like a child. For myself, I must learn.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Breeze, neon signs are shining through the tired trees. Lovers walking to and fro, everyone has someone place to go. Now listen, hear the cars go past. They don't even see me flying by so fast. Moving, going, who knows where. Only thing I know is I'm not going there. Where do you go when you feel that your brain is on fire? Where do you go when you don't even know what it is you desire? Listen, laughter everywhere. Life is in the air. As the night comes and the town awakes, sound of children calling and the squeal of birds.
Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Hey, good morning again. Aloha. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show, second hour. And quite a few things I'd like to chat with you about. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to call in. There's no structure to this hour, so rarely is there any anyway. But feel free to call if you got something else, or you got a hot tip, or you got something to do with ethics, or anything. Just feel free to call up and chat with us. You can pick us up at carolcox.com, and you can get live stream there or podcasts. Or you can read many of the stories and little information that we have on various story subjects, as well as go to KWAI1080AM.com and listen live there. And things are working and hopping. And again, send us an email if you have questions or a story idea, or not a story idea, but something that you can't seem to get answers to. Give us a call. And you can always call me at 782-6627. But I don't know. I got a couple calls the other day from some community members as well as some teachers that was expressing concerns with the Kamaili School Academy being impacted by dust that is being generated and traveling to their classrooms. And this school composes about 900 plus students, and it's we'll say by definition the community is poverty stricken, or the level of poverty. But these are human beings, and regardless what they are, they should not. Our government should have been more interested in. And this is an entire community, So then we take 900-plus children, and then the staff, and then the custodians, and all of those people that are there breathing this dust in. And the area that it was built on is habitually has been contaminated sites, dumping, illegal dumpings, and in fact, a number of stories that I had done over the years talked about that area, and these illegal dump sites were right there. Concerns for pesticides, you name it. And so the dust is migrating into the schoolroom, the classroom. And yes, it did go before the neighborhood board, but and it was covered, the development or the proposed development was covered by the, you know, by all the papers and the TV stations and all. And that's something interesting. It brings home a point that the media here has a, I don't know what to say, how to describe this situation, but a person can come along and propose, and everybody's so punch drunk on the number of jobs it's going to make. It's an environmentally friendly project. It's this and it's that, and, you know, and it's going to bring jobs, and it's going to do this, and it's going to generate. But not all green, so-called green projects are, when you look at them and assess them in totality, they're not all that they promise to be. They don't benefit you that much when you give up. So imagine 167 plus acres, and I may be off a bit, but it's up there, 160 some acres. And you know, we have this mantra about no net loss in ag land. So how do we justify mowing down and grubbing and pushing away plants and dirt and leveling it off and then building 140,000 panel solar farm? Now, an interesting thing is that they went before the neighborhood board, and this is where, it, coupled with that and how the media, you have all kinds of coverage, you know, and things that the promises, and they're reiterating the promises that's being made by these companies. But when they began to function and there's negative impacts, you're hard-placed to find coverage. The media and all, you got to go back and sell them the idea that there is something negative about this project that they boast about and told you how great it was going to do to provide jobs and help the economy. But if you were to go over to each of those homes that are in that area, in that community that this solar farm wraps around, basically, you'd ask, why and how is this happening? You see. So if you want to see some of the video, go to and the pictures and see how bad it is. We were actually allowed to go in and swab the furniture and the desks and what have you, and it's horrendous. And these children, no children or anybody should be breathing this dust. And someone had the audacity to say, well, it might not be that bad. You try sitting and breathing dust and see. And see if it's how bad it is. And you try getting it out of your eyelids. And you try developing, have this young body at kindergarten. And this is the thing. The school has 900 plus population of students and faculty and administrators and staff, but then they also have kindergarten to 12th grade. So these little keikis or children, for those who are local, are exposed. And you got to meet the principal and the other people. I wished I had people like that in my life. Even as an adult, they care. They're struggling trying to deal with this humongous company that that has presented this problem to their community and having an impact. And that company is called Eurus Corp, right? Eurus. And it's Japanese-based company, partnered with HECO. And HECO partners with the Navy with transfers and what have you, fast-tracking folks. And I was able to view it from the air and actually saw one water truck for the entire project being operated. And if you can imagine 160 acres plus that have been graded and grubbed, what I mean by that is just a naked earth now. It's scorching and it's just naked. When I suspect there will be runoff problems, flooding problems, and siltation problems in the near future when we have heavy rain events. And they were allowed to plop this down, the PUC. And there's so much suspect about this project. They claim it's going to deliver 28 megawatts and at Solar Base Honolulu, and a 27.6 megawatt solar project. And this is considered the largest in Hawaii. And it's plopped right next door. If you stood on the school border, you right there, the buildings, you'd fall in. And I couldn't help but notice in the school there, the ground, they've got this freshly painted tricycle course for the keiki to use and drive around and play. But why would we have such a facility next door to a school with young kids and no measure? They got one black construction cloth up, and that's it. So, again, you know, this thing about solar and windmills, and it's renewable, and it's environmentally friendly. But sometimes we get carried away with that. And we even had the Blue Planet. You remember Jeff Michelina and with Sierra Club. And there's so much about, you know, they urged the PUC to approve Henkel's request. So that brings me to my other statement, and you've heard me say this, and I'm an environmentalist, and as many of you will get offended about this, but this quote environmental effort in this community sometimes can have such negative impacts, you can't tell if it's a bunch of bigots or people just thinking too much and not thinking enough about the real impacts on a community, on a people, the minority communities. So, you know, they get out and they aggressively promote these things and get involved politically to encourage and ask to have certain things waived and what have you, because this is really good for the environment. But how can you split and separate the two and call it good for the environment, because the people are part of this environment? That's why they call it environmental justice. So when we put this program in and what have you, imagine you've denuded the ground of all the vegetation, and we know factually through science that trees and plants have a tendency to influence and keep areas cooler than they would be when it's just radiation reflecting off of rocks and that type of thing, and where they are located. There's mountains or pu'u or hills there, or granite and basalt. Granite mostly in California areas. But again, this is it's shameful. Now we got to work our way back, and if you want to help this community or this school, please call, her name is Anna Winslow, is the principal. And as I say, if I had children, I'd want them to go to that school. That administration And it's a charter school, by the way. And I would say to you, that's where I would want my children. You see the teachers there. Each one of them. There's one lady that's hapai or expecting or pregnant. A teacher. She's concerned, but she's more concerned with the children's health and welfare there and breathing that. And here she is, a developing baby. And one, I'm told, and I don't have any name or anything, but one education assistant, or EA, has been put on medical for some while by her doctor because of the dust. So you see when these big businesses come to town and then HECO, and we'll talk about this, that there was this NextEra deal and HECO was and it was banning or prohibiting the installation of more photovoltaic panels on homes and private homes because they didn't have the infrastructure, and yet they're busy building one of the world's largest solar farms in Waianae. And so that's some major undertaking. That means the governor had to be party to this. That means all of this, naming Randy Iwasi and all of that, this all comes back to play into the bigger game, the bigger picture. So, you know, it just was coincidence that I saw a TV show, a news coverage about where the governor, current governor Ige and Mark Takai went to school, and they had a teacher there that taught the two of them, and I see those big buttery smiles on their face and happy and what have you, and then I'm thinking, how happy would he be to have to sit there in a classroom at Kamaili School, because he, as happy as he is, see, it's all about how we grow up and we promote ourselves, but what do we, and we are all in this together, and there's this melting pot. Folks, if you believe this is a melting pot, then you're not a very good cook. Something's wrong here. This governor should have said, okay, if we're going to fast-track this, and we're going to get all this down, and the Department of Business and the Development, Economic Development, is part of this also, and all of that going on in the background, I want to cut no corners. This is the governor should. I want to make sure that if you install this, or maybe we shouldn't install it of this size, then we don't want to lose much more ag land. All of those things. So you look at him, and I couldn't help to be provoked to think that, gee, he had a happy childhood, and see, everything went good for him. And Takai, and yet these children over here are primarily Native Hawaiian. And they got to sit and breathe dust. Now, if you're offended by that, tough. I mean, let's call it what it is. It's just not to rain on their parade and how successful they were. But when you're the governor and you have the welfare of all people, then, you know, you need to get involved. And so we filed an actual formal complaint with the Department of Health Clean Air Branch on this matter, the fugitive dust drifting in. Now, I'm told that the school, out of its own budget, will be paying to have the dirt sample or have monitors put around for the dust. And then there's they're told that by the health department or someone that something about if it's 5 milligrams, it's less than, you know, it's okay. That's a state's level. But how can you play numbers with the numbers game when you've got caking kindergarten kids, very young and susceptible to all of these environmental woes? who in their right mind would even think of that? And why not take measures so they, if they take a mister and put there, no, that's not good enough either. There should be a buffer, a greater buffer of a couple acres before that community and that school being impacted. But no, because it generates electricity. And I'm told that even what they claim they're going to be generating, they will never attain that level. And some say maybe a third of it. I don't know. I haven't given much attention to there. But it's a big problem. So this is the kind of the climate we have here in Hawaii. Those that are listening out of state, you might be fooled by the lovely Lays and the Miley Lays when you come here and you smell them and how beautiful, and it gets you in a trance. But there is something evil in the minds of the people here in government. They tend to abandon native people. Common practice. You stand there, and I took wipes, and the teachers have wiped the tops off for the day before. And I was able to wipe them again, and go to carolcox.com, and you can look at this. And I don't want to tell you it'll make you sick. It will make you sick if you have to sit there and breathe it. But if you saw this, and if you were a caring person like myself, or, you know, you get emotional about this, because something have to give. Something, you just have to know that we have a clean air branch of inspectors, and they're stepping over one another to go to lunch. And so I went down to file a request for all the complaints that the agency has received, and any notice of violations or fines that have been assessed. And you would think that would be readily available. Well, this is what I got, the reception. Well, you got to fill out the form, and we got to give it to this guy who will look at it and then give it to this guy and tell him it's okay to release this information and give it to this guy. And in the meantime, all that I want from them is to go over there and make sure that when there is fugitive dust moving into the outside of that development site and that property, then it immediately shut them down or take some more mitigating measures, like putting in a sprinkler or mister system. But again, this is going to be a problem from here on out for that community, for that classroom. Because if you just go and bulldoze all the plants, and you got to see this. I've never seen anything so massive in my life as far as a construction site. Never. And it's just wrong. So 524-1080 is the number if you have a comment or question about this or want to give us some more information. But I'm really it's called the EEYNI Solar Project, LLC. And they get a tax break. See, if you were to get it in, they get it for a U.S. investment tax credit. And that's the Japanese Toyo Corporation there in Japan. So they, isn't that kind of neat? You get to be a foreign entity, and you move into a community at the beckoning of the state government and the federal government, because the Navy is also complicit in this. And then you mow down the dirt and the trees and all, and then you just crap on the native people. You get a lot for your dollar here in Hawaii if you're on the mainland listening to this. This is a fine place. You get to screw up the environment. You get to poison native people. You get to sicken the environment and create silt and do all of that. And all that is, and all you need to do now is give maybe $500 or $1,000 and you can screw the whole planet up. This is the best deal going on the planet Earth, is Hawaii. You got some project that you want to do? just find your politician and give him a couple of nickels and dollars. And, you know, they're so petty. They don't think. And many of them have college degrees, folks. You know, engineers, doctors, PhDs. But at the end of the day, they seem to drop the ball and show clearly that they don't care about these communities. They really don't. And it's just, it's shameful. And those that are advocating for solar, I'm for solar too, but don't put it around a school. And we don't know the environmental impacts of radiation. We don't know, but we hear they claim that there is no real threat to radiation from radiation these, but I don't know when we will find out. I don't, because this is something new. I don't know. And is it going to benefit that community, or will it drive up the price? So it seems like what I witness is that the solar farm benefits the HECO and the middlemen and the developers. I don't believe that community will benefit, even though it's stationed there, but that community will see cheaper rates or anything. So, in essence, the sunshine, what I view is in this case is that here's the sun just bright and brilliant, and it's free. But what is missing is that we, this land underneath the sun, we need to gain control over that. So we do that by pimping out the politicians and giving them a small donation and getting other nonprofits to, quote, environmental groups to give the blessing, and then says, oh, yeah, well, solar is great. It's the answer to the planet's problems. But in the process, you now expose a community of people and the environment and the siltation, and it's upslope. So we are definitely going to probably see. You probably think that I'm just exaggerating this, but if you were to see it, you've never seen such a major undertaking ever. If you've had the occasion to go to the desert and see the sand dunes, not where the plants, where you've just seen sand. That's what this looks like. They have scarified or graded every single thing that looks like a plant. Every blade of grass. Everything. And it just sits there and exposed to the sunlight. Is that going to raise the temperature up? And in this situation now, remember, this is the same state that its schools are heated. And they don't have adequate cooling and air conditioning in these schools. So imagine being sweating it out and having to breathe in these dust particles. You figure it out. What have they done to deserve this? So this place called the melting pot, it seems that people, and primarily I'm witnessing Native people, are the ones that are getting jacked around. And others that are the newcomers get to celebrate and tell how what school they went and they were a good student. Let's see if we can give them the same respect. And these people that benefited from these nice schools that become governors and senators and all, let's see them speak out and advocate and make decisions and not sell them down the drain. And that's what's happening at this Kamaili Academy. And I say, if you don't like it, then call someone and complain about it. Because if you saw what I saw and you see the dirt, no one would ever subject human beings, especially children, to that. You got to be the most insensitive, dollar-hunting person on the planet, and you got to be all about money and no morals. That's just the way it is. And when the school has to pay out of its own pocket to put up coverings at the windows, and the thing is, most of these windows are jalous, the one with the louvers, so it's never sealed. So imagine, always a constant exchange and dust coming in and out, and the air moving in and out, circulating. And I can't help only to think about the lady who's expecting a newborn child working there in that place. And I can only suspect that, and we're going to go out and talk to some of the homeowners there that live in that area. And so that you'll know why I'm sounding so foul-mouthed or pissed off or whatever, is that in this area now, where this is located, you have three major homeless shelters. Then you have a transitional housing. Then you have the low income surrounding that area. And then you have one of the largest homeless gatherings of anywhere in the state, right there at the harbor, downhill of this. This is environmental racism. And if you want to look up racism, go look it up. And if you want to look up environment, go look it up and put the two together, and then you'll see. You should see at the end of that a picture of our state government and our city government. Because that's what it's about. HECO couldn't have put that in. They could not have put it in if the government didn't pave the way and accelerate it so that, and Euro could not have gotten approval because they wanted to get that tax break. And so hurry it up. Move it fast. Let's get going. So this is something terrible, you know, terrible, I tell you. So anyway, if you care to call the governor's office, because it's his folks that he appointed, that the PUC and Iwasi, and all of those people there that gave their blessings and what have you, ask the governor to show a kind side and do something. Go back, and if you insist on having that, set the buffer back. Take maybe drastic measures, but give that community a breather. And also that development, the developer of that project, HECO and others, whoever's going to benefit financially, should in fact pay the school's cost in mitigating that and reducing the threats to the children and to the population of people that live there in that area. But again, you know, many of them are just trying to make paycheck to paycheck, if that. And so this is when big boys come in and just walk all over and trounce the rights of people less fortunate. And, yeah, you do see it here in Paradise, if those of you out there listening. You do hear it, and you do see it. So that is the real issue. So anyway, I'm going to take a break, and I'll be right back in about 2-3 minutes.
I lost myself on a cool, damp night. Gave myself in that misty light. Was hypnotized by strange delight. Under a lilac tree, I made wine from the lilac tree. Put my heart in its recipe. It makes me see what I want to see. Be what I want to be. When I think more than I want to think, do things I never should do. I drink much more than I ought to drink, because it brings me back you. Lilac wine is sweet,
like my love. Lilac wine, I feel unsteady like my love. Listen to me, I cannot see clearly. Isn't that he coming to me nearly? Well, I have about 20 minutes left. Lilac wine is sweet and heady. Where's my love? Lilac wine, I feel unsteady. Where's my love? Listen to me, why is everything so hazy? Isn't that he, or am I going crazy, dear? Lilac wine, I feel I'm ready.
Hey, good morning, Tim. How are you?
Good morning, Carol.
Yes.
Doing pretty good.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good.
Yeah, so how was the surf contest?
It was early. I had the first heat at 7 o'clock. That's a little too early for an old guy. But it was fun. I just wanted to get in touch with you, let everybody know that the new temporary executive director will start with the ethics, I believe, tomorrow. And I urge all your listeners to call their city council people and let them know that they're concerned about a lack of an ethics commission for Oahu during the largest public works project in the history of the state, and that the public needs to get involved and let their representatives know that this is not kosher. Somebody needs to keep an eye on these people, and right now we have nobody.
Mm-hmm.
And so I urge the public to get involved. And also I wanted to let everybody know next Friday, August 5th, from 6:30 to 8:30, they're going to have a mayoral forum at Sand Island Access Road at the New Hope Oahu facility. And I'm sure most of the public is aware that most of the debates or information offered to the public has only concerned Peter Carlisle, Kirk Caldwell, and Charles DeJew. But there are other people that are running for mayor, and this event next Friday is open to everybody, and it's 2 hours long, and I am going to be the focus of my points are going to be asking Caldwell about what is going on with ethics and bringing it to a highlight.
Mm-hmm. And why is he not taking drastic measures to move things faster? And not an acting director, executive.
Well, he's kind of claiming that it's the commission's responsibility and that he is staying with a hands-off approach and supposedly letting them deal with the issues. But three of the six commissioners that are now on the board were appointed by him, and all three of those commission members have donated money to his campaigns in the past. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they're very fair or partial, even though they claim they are above that. So he's kind of protected himself by the structure of the system, saying that the commission has all the responsibilities of upholding our ethics, but at the same time, three of those people, I believe, should recuse themselves in any hearings or matters that involve the mayor. And our city council is complicit in not making this a point of pressure, because they also have complaints of ethics violations against them. Mm-hmm. So without the public and a strong press pushing the issue, it's kind of just been pushed down the sideline.
You're right. And again, that time seal I'm offering you and anybody else running for mayor, because this morning, just as I left my home there, I saw a commercial saying the top three candidates, right? And honestly, I want to know the top three. So you had one guy was the mayor, Carlisle, who decided to lay down in the aisles and go to sleep and decide I'm not going to, you know. And then he's back. You understand? And then there's DeJoux, who go window shopping, window shopping politician. Well, oh, there's an opening in that. I think I'll run for that office today. Oh, well, no, I'll run it for another office. It's an insult to the people of this city that or this state, because one day, you know, I'd like to see his list of chores that he did work on the homeless issues while he was out on vacation before this opening came up. I'd like to see what he was doing on crime. I'd like to see what he was doing with many of things, right? But the media then assigns him as one of the top three candidates. Are we that gullible?
Well, the media is complicit in that the general attitude of our media, there are exceptions. I would say Civil Beat stands out in that they are the least of the entities involved in the little circle of power on the island. But,
well, I won't give that anoint them as that on this show, but they write and they cover stories. I won't go as far as saying that they're the only ones, because you're talking to a show that sticks out
well,
with the truth. You know,
I get the truth here. I concede that point to you, Carol. You were there before Civil Beat.
Yeah, you get the truth here, and I ain't trying to shape or make politicians or anything. It's just form, you know, but yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I want to make sure you understand that you still have the time, because you're running for mayor, and I gave Mr. I can't see his name right now, but anyway, Ronald, him time, and I've offered others, so still your time is still available to you, and if you want to come in and share with us,
I'd love to, but like I said, there are plenty of other people running
mm-hmm.
for mayor, and I've had discussions with news directors and general managers of our local television news, and I asked them, how did you come about with only being represented by three out of the 12 candidates? And they said, well, because of time constraints and this and that we decided we'd only take the people that have held public office in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that eliminated eight people instantly.
Yes.
And it was kind of an insult to the voters that they were not smart enough to be able to comprehend 11 or 12 people's views, and that they could only handle 3 people's views on the issue. And so the media has kind of taken it upon themselves of deciphering who the public can even consider. Even though those people all went down, got nominating signatures, paid their fees, signed up with the Campaign Spending Commission, did all the steps in the process to get themselves on the ballot, but our local media decides they don't really have a chance.
Sound like you're describing.
We're not even going to cover it.
You sound like you're describing what should go on in a democracy.
Exactly. But, you know, when you have a one-party system with a lack of competition for news coverage and all kinds of opportunities, you don't get that. Mm-hmm. You don't get those rights.
Mm-hmm.
People in Hawaii have been, you know, spoon-fed who's going to be here and who's going to do this.
Yeah, we have billions of dollars squandered and then being begged for on a rail project. We have sewage flowing on the streets. We have this major flooding. After all of this could have been prevented if stream maintenance, stream management there at Middle Street in those areas and all that. A lot of it is attributable to...
And also all the stuff that came out of underneath the viaduct near the airport, out onto Sand Island and through there, those people have been living under there for years, and it's state property. It's got huge signs on it saying no trespassing.
Mm-hmm.
But our government decides that they want to become enablers.
But
they don't want to enforce the law.
Here's the thing, though. See, we're stepping way down the line. Caldwell has a responsibility. He's been chasing the homeless around, right?
Right.
And destroying the properties and what have you and getting sued. So my point is that, not going to flesh everything out, the point is that he is the top three when we got crap or flowing in the streams and that he has been going down. And by the way, I don't know, I can't say for sure and exactly, but the high fecal coliform that is found in the Kehi Lagoon area,
yeah.
Just a while back there was a broken sewage pipe of raw sewage right there under the Nimitz in the property in the back of DOT. So it might be a big lie that they're saying that it was the amount of fecal matter that was produced by the homeless is one thing. But they also, I don't even know if they really fixed that pipe. So
And that's probably your next story.
Well, no, I've been down there over a year or so back, and there was actual, you could see the toilet tissue and the human waste flowing into the lagoon. And you didn't see it. So when I see the media saying, oh, the top three, well, let's back up here. The other guys, okay, they weren't holding an office. But at least we see Caldwell, and he is not a top three. He is a failed policymaker and just absolutely a crook. Just the way it is, period.
And there's one other thing I wanted to bring up, because, you know, our primary media that people listen to is focusing on the rail and the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a huge problem with pollution in Hawaii. And the thing that got me up off the couch and screaming inside my house was the report that when Caldwell went back to the UN for World Oceans Day, and he was quoted on the paper or in the story that he is there to encourage other nations to understand that the ocean is, you know, precious and we need to take care of it. And he said that with a straight face after all the sewage spills at Ala Moana Beach Park, the spills last week at Koala's, mm-hmm. and the spills over on the windward side. And then I also read an article briefly last week saying the EPA was going to call out Hawaii for polluting the waters. So for Koala to sit and lecture other people about the improprieties that are done with pollution in their countries, and he can't even take care of where he lives.
Right.
And it's not an issue that sustainable coastlines look at or anything, but you know how much sewage right. is dumped off Sand Island every day. It's 28 million gallons.
Yeah.
And they're under EPA decree because of the process that they use, and they've been fined, and they were ordered to improve it. And the gall of him to go around and lecture other people about pollution
yeah.
got my gander up. Well, I mean, I was incensed.
Well, we must warn people, alert them, that when the media say that, that's irresponsible, and they're just basically saying ignore all the bad things that this person have done, but you can't ignore them.
It's utterly impossible. Many.
And so I'm just hoping it rings home that this is, you're being told who to vote for. Hold on, and we have about 2 minutes, so hold on. Caller, thank you. Real quick, your comment or question?
Could you answer a question I have? A community room, when the sewage pipe comes out somewhere there, it goes up in the ocean, and it's so deep. What is that figure of the outfall for the sewage treatment plants?
Well,
that
coming through the Kei Lagoon doesn't go through the sewage treatment plant. It's just in the stream.
The fluid that's treated just goes into the stream?
No. That's a separate. Are you asking the Kei Lagoon?
I'm talking about the outfall.
Oh, the outfall. That's back of on Sand Island, back of Sand Island treatment plant.
What depth is the water? I heard it's about 200 feet.
200 feet?
Deep.
Yeah, it goes out. The outfall is out, and they have to take a video of it every day or so, and take pictures and sample and what have you. That's what they do. Well, it's under scrutiny, but again, you can have violations and exceedance of levels of sulfur and what have you. It just depends on. You don't know, because the EPA is really, they're on a consent decree, and consent decrees are deadly for environmental, because you're working it out, so, right? You kind of like insulate it.
Yeah.
And then it requires the enforcer to be the person you agreed with the consent decree. And so that leaves the people out of it, and that they go ahead and business as usual. Sometimes consent decrees are nothing more than a cover up.
Violation, like a federal law or something.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you think they'd jump on that?
The Clean Water Act, but again, no matter what they do, you still need an aggressive enforcer. If you don't have the enforcer, you could have all the consent decrees and everything you want. But
yeah, right.
Yeah.
The law is an enforcer.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that, and I'm down to the last 30 seconds, so thank you for calling. All right. Thank you. Go ahead, Tim, right quick.
Okay, I just want to thank and then let everybody know that on Sand Island Access Road at the New Hope facility there next Friday night, they have plenty of room for anybody that wants to come down and join. They said they had 1,000 seats, and they anticipate the forum will be recorded
okay.
and televised at a later date.
All righty. Well, Tim, thank you. Tim Gary, and you're also running for mayor. Please give me a call, and you're more than welcome. We want to be fair and give everybody equal time. So thank you again, and I'll listen for you this week.
Okay, have a great week.
Aloha.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Well, folks, thank you for tuning in. And, you know, the way things roll around here, if you can't be truthful, then you can't be. I think that I've never seen anything like it in my adult life. I've read about corruption, and I've read about being manipulated by media, and I've read about people that will look you in their face and lie to you and tell you everything's fine, just trust me. We need to get out of that mode. So thank you, and again, we'll see you next week. Aloha.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.